Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, we're talking with a third generation leader preparing to guide his family business into its 60th year and into a new era. Brendan Wilson is the current president of Montrose Molders, a producer of injection molded and extruded plastics components, tooling, and decorating. The company was founded by his grandfather, who passed away just 3 years ago. Now, Brendan is helping lead a generational transition, one that will see his father fully retire at the end of the year and his brother Andrew elevate to operations manager as the Montrose team embraces an exciting but challenging period of change. Brendan, welcome to Growing Up B2B. Excited to hear your story.
Thank you very much, Ed. I appreciate you having me.
Awesome. Brendan, for those who aren't familiar, just tell us a bit about Montrose Molder, what you do, what sets you apart in the plastics molding and decorating space.
Sure. So Montrose is a third generation custom plastics manufacturer. So basically what we do is injection molding, tooling, assembly, and extrusion and part decoration. We serve a variety of industries, lighting, retail solutions, consumer goods, industrial goods, agricultural, pharma, defense. The list really goes on. I like to say that if it's made out of plastic, we can do it as long as it's not clean room medical. As far as what sets us apart from other custom plastics manufacturers that essentially do the same thing that we do is that I like to consider us a one-stop solution for the entire manufacturing process. Our customers like the fact that they can come to us and write a single purchase order, and we can help them with everything soup to nuts, from part design to tooling, molding, extrusion, assembly. They don't have to corral a number of different vendors. So that is the feedback that we've gotten, is that they like that feature of dealing with Montrose. Going beyond that, though, I like to think that our customers come back to us because of the six decades of experience that we have. We provide a superior service with out-of-the-box creative ideas because of the wealth of knowledge of our team, all the expertise and knowledge that we've gleaned over the last six decades. And then we deliver it on time, to spec, at a price that works for them. So I think that's what sets us apart.
Cool. And speaking of, you're coming up on the 60th anniversary, which I believe is in 2026, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay. So talk about that. What does that milestone mean to you and your family, getting to 60?
Oh, that milestone means quite a bit. It's 60 years is a long time to be in business. It's a testament to our service. It's a testament to team. And while 60 is just a number, behind that number, there's a lot of history. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that went into getting to 60 years in business. I think about everything that my grandfather had to do in order to make it during his generation, everything that my father had to endure in order to bring the business to where it is today, through good times and bads, ups and downs, recessions and booms. And the milestone is especially meaningful now because, as you mentioned in the introduction, you know, my grandfather passed 3 years ago. And so I often think about, with him no longer here, what would he think about? What would he think about the job that we're doing today, the work that we're carrying, and the legacy, his legacy that we're carrying on? The coming up on 60 years means a lot for that as well. And the last thing that I'll say is that there's a lot of members of the Montrose team, the Montrose family, that have been with us for going on 30 years. That milestone is as much an accomplishment for them as it is for anybody else, whether you have the Wilson last name or not. So yeah, it means quite a bit to us, and we intend to celebrate it.
Nice. Now, just a quick question about your grandfather. Was he still active in the company when you had started there? Did you actually overlap with your grandfather, or had he retired by then?
So he retired in about 2000, 2001. And while I was a kid sweeping the floors, coming in every once in a while in between school and whatnot. I never really worked with him full time. I joined the company full time in 2009. So he was already retired by the time that I joined the company, but he would come down every once in a while from the lake house in Vermont and tour the facility and rip us apart if he saw something going on that he didn't agree with. But no, unfortunately, we didn't have the opportunity to overlap.
Okay. And speaking of the 60th year, you had mentioned when we spoke earlier about a unique way that you might recognize 60 years, something actually inspired by military connections. It was interesting, and I thought maybe you could share a little bit more about that and why it resonated with you.
Yeah, sure. I was talking to a friend of mine recently, shout out to Alan Skarsky, but I was mentioning the fact that coming up on 60 years and acknowledge that's quite a big milestone. I said, well, of course, we're going to party. We're going to celebrate, but I wanted to recognize it in an interesting way. And he, because he's got a military background, he brought up the concept of challenge coins. And it's not something that I'd ever heard of. And evidently a challenge coin is like a medallion, almost like a medal, like a heavy piece of like metal that is custom coined to commemorate the accomplishment or the milestone of a particular military unit, right? Let's say a military unit, I don't know, again, goes to a milestone, some sort of great feat, they might coin challenge coins and pass them out to that unit. And it becomes a point of pride and recognition for everybody involved in that unit to say, hey, look, this is the proof that I had something to do with this. I was there for that. And it becomes a part of the culture where it have newcomers coming in and they see the challenge coin. So what do I have to do to get a challenge coin? So I thought it was this interesting, creative way to not only celebrate the milestone, but also acknowledge all the contributions that everybody's made here. Look, we haven't decided on anything yet, but it's just one of the ideas that I was kicking around. I thought it was a good one.
Same here. That's why I made you talk about it now. Yeah. I liked it too.
Yeah,
so thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you were referring to your grandfather and what he might have thought about if he were to walk the facility today. How would you say the company has evolved from your grandfather's time to now? What would you say is really some marks of the evolution?
That's a great question. First of all, my grandfather started the company as a machine shop with a couple of tool makers and some Bridgeport machining presses, machine drill presses. And that's how they made tools back in the day.
Sure.
They turned the knobs and they were the technology, not necessarily the machinery that they were creating the tools on. And over the years, in the 70s, he started buying injection molding machines. In the 80s and 90s, CNCs became a pretty prominent thing. These machining centers, the CNCs, were purchased and invested in. And in the 2000s, 2010s, when we started buying more advanced injection molding equipment, robotics, automation cells. And just this year, we purchased our first six-axis robots. And now we're starting to get into, and I know that we'll probably talk about it later, but the AI, what AI has to offer. What I would say as far as how the company has evolved since my grandfather's time is that it's evolved technologically. It's things are the way that we accomplish what we need to accomplish looks quite a bit different today than it did back then. In addition to that, we're a much bigger company through organic growth and through acquisition over the years, we've grown quite a bit. And I think that the company today, if you were to walk it, just the sheer volume of what we're producing certainly looks a lot different than what he was doing at that time. But I guess the last thing that I'll say is that while all of that looks different, we still, and I'm proud of this, we maintained the values that he instilled in the company while he was here. It's basically just treat team like family, treat customers like royalty, and never stop improving.
That really resonates with my journey as a second gen in that my dad had retired in 2000 and passed in 2012, but he was very much a great advisor to me. I often say, I don't understand the technology. I don't really understand what you're doing anymore. But I found that the types of things that I would come to him, the questions I would ask were always about people, you know,
sure. About
yeah. human communication and about how do I handle this person or how do I handle a conversation with this client or with this employee. And those, he was exemplary at answering. Struck a chord when he referenced that about holding true to the values and the people and the culture and things of that nature. That definitely resonated.
Yeah. Some things change and some things don't, right?
That's right. Interesting year coming up, both the 60th and your father is officially stepping back as the year closes. So talk about that a bit. How are you preparing for that transition?
In a way, I feel like he's been preparing me for this for my entire life. I remember going to work with him as a kid in his pickup truck with my legs dangling off the passenger seat of his truck to go into the shop and sweep the floor in the mornings. And in high school, eventually I would, you know, I worked my way up to second shift machine operator. And then from there, on breaks throughout college, I would make my way through all the different departments, working through all the different departments at different times, and finally joined the company in 2009 and worked in a number of different leadership roles since then in order to prepare me for where I'm at today. So it was like this journey that he had me on, that he had us on, my brother and I, for really the last couple of decades in order to make sure that we were ready for today. But and in this last 6 months, year or so, we've obviously been very close and having a lot of conversation about what lies ahead. And that's certainly helped prepare. But I think the main thing that I'd like to say about this is that he and his business partner, Mike, have just done just an awesome job of setting this company up on firm footing, both operationally and financially, in order for a smooth transition to take place and give us the best chance of success. So, you know, what they've done in order to prepare this company for the next generation is really incredible. And we owe a great debt of gratitude to the work that they both did in order to get the company to where it is today. So yeah, the preparation has come from all angles, and you're never going to be 100% ready, but thanks to all the prep that I've done, that he's done with me, that Mike's done with me and my brother, I feel that we're pretty well prepared for what lies ahead.
And in many respects, you've already, assuming the president title not long ago or some time ago, you've already effectively made the transition in many respects. It's just that he's now fully stepping back, and that's the big transition.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. That raises another point too. You mentioned your brother, Andrew. So he's being promoted to operations manager. What strengths does he bring to his role? And secondly, how would you see your kind of partnership relationship with him evolving in this new role?
Yeah. So Andrew's been involved in procurement and inventory management, materials management for the last like 10 or 15 years. And just those roles in general have given him like fantastic insight into how the organization works. And certainly over the last couple of years, slowly conceding operational responsibilities to him. And he's picked up everything that's been thrown at him with just incredible zeal and ability. And I have no doubt that he's going to be able to succeed in this role just because of his very in-depth knowledge of every facet of the organization. He's a really smart guy. In a lot of ways, he's far more technical than I am. So I feel more comfortable with people like in a sales meeting, in a conference room, whereas while he can certainly do all that, he's probably more comfortable with the machinery and how it works and all things mechanical. Allows us to separate into these two roles where I deal more with business development and growing the business and the challenges associated with managing the company at a higher level, whereas he takes the bridge of the ship on the operations side. And we can serve as co-leaders in that regard. I have no doubt that he's going to succeed. We've been preparing him. There's been some outside education, some outside courses, a lot of inside project and responsibilities that we've thrown at him in order to make him ready. And yeah, we're pretty excited with how this is all going to play out, with him taking more of the operations side of things and then me taking everything else.
So it sounds like you have different strengths, but they're very complementary when it comes to an operation like Montrose Molders. He's the inside, a little bit more inside focused to the operation. You're a bit more external focused. And it really seems that the two of you balance each other out in many respects.
Yeah, exactly right. And to this point, there was a couple of years there over the last couple of years where I was trying to do both, and one foot in the organization, one foot outside. And I just felt like I wasn't doing either with 100% of my effort and my ability. And it makes sense whereas he has this strength innately already, to just elevate him to take that responsibility off my plate so that I can focus on what I consider myself to be better at anyway. So yeah, our strengths
so
are
context is excellent, excellent. And just for context, is Andrew older, younger than you?
So I'm the oldest and he's younger than me.
So how many years between you?
About two, a little less than two, 18 months.
Okay. So would you say he was somewhat influenced in this path by watching you? Because you preceded him and you said you made Montrose your mission, and he's a couple of years behind, but he's watching you, I guess, to some extent. Would you say that was influential, or was he more or less inclined to join the business much as you were?
I think we were on the same path. Okay. It's what I think. We stepped on the path at different times, but we were always on the same path.
Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
Dad's retiring, Andrew's elevating. Definitely things are going to look a little different in the year ahead as you celebrate your 60th. So what excites you about that? What's most exciting to you about this next chapter, Brendan?
That's a great question. There, you look at the different generations, and obviously my grandfather started the company and left a huge mark on it. And then my father took over around 2000 and then left a huge mark on it. He and his business partner, Mike, they've had great influence over how the company looks today, and they've certainly left it for the better. And it's exciting to be able to look forward to the mark that we're going to leave as the third generation on the company and kind of mold it and shape it in a way that we feel is best. And then so the ability to grow the company and make the decisions and really leave our mark on it the way that the prior generations had left theirs is an exciting prospect. And so what does that look like? We need to automate more. We need to incorporate automation more into the organization in order to continue to evolve and pursue new industries and improve our quality, improve our throughput. So that's something that we're already in the process of, and I intend to ratchet it up. As AI continues to enter the workplace, we need to leverage that a lot more often. We're already starting to toy around with it in different facets of the organization, and I see that accelerate. We need to enter new markets. We've had success in the markets that we've served so far, but there are certain markets out there, defense, pharmaceutical, medical, that we really should be going after just in order to improve and grow the business. I'm short answer is that I'm just excited about the opportunity to leave our distinct mark on business.
Awesome. And I got to ask the flip side of that question. What's the most concerning or intimidating part of this moment of change coming?
Yeah, no, it's yeah, this is the interesting part, right? So I guess I'll start by saying that statistics are not on our side, right? A minority of businesses make it into the second generation. And I think it's something like less than 5% of businesses make it into the fourth generation. So it's again,
Right.
yeah, it's you know what it is? It's a minority of businesses make it to the second generation. It's less than 12% make it into the third. And then less than 5% make it into the fourth. Again, statistics are not on our side. So it's a huge weight to carry, especially when you take into account all the people, associated with this business, working in it, that rely on this business for their livelihood. So it's a tremendous weight. It's a tremendous responsibility. So while it is an opportunity, it's also a responsibility. And we're not taking it lightly. But that said, I feel like we're really well positioned because of the team that we have, because of the suppliers that we've been able to, the supplier relationships that we've been able to foster over the years, the customer relationships. Again, I'll say our team a second time. I can't say enough about the team here. And again, the job that my father and Mike have done in order to make this company what it is. I think that I'm very confident that while statistics are not on our side, we'll get to where we want to be for sure.
And I think based on so many things that you've said and that you're doing and have already done, I think you're going to buck the stats. In fact, it reminds me of I was in my early 20s and I just turned down a job to come into D'Elia Associates, the family business. And I ran into a consultant somewhere along the way and he said 85% of businesses fail from one generation to the next. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, I really needed to hear that right now. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the pep talk.
I really appreciate that little chestnut of information. But one of the things that I often look for is, and found it in myself, is when there's a generational transition, does that rising generation have a vision?
Yeah.
And
Why are
our
they in the
implications, you
business?
very much, yeah. And I think you're dead on clear about that and what, the mission ahead is. And by all indications, that you're owning it as your brother is owning it as well, and the leadership team that you're going to forge ahead with. I'm pretty sure you're going to break that. I think the odds are probably in your favor and not against you right now, by all indications. So that's a good
I
thing.
appreciate that. Yeah, it comes down to why you're in the business. Are you in the business to coast and live a cushy life, or are you in the business because you're passionate about it and you feel a tie to it, and it's your purpose, and you're motivated to make it better than what it is? I think that I firmly place ourselves in the latter category.
You touched on a couple of things, long-standing relationships with suppliers, with customers. So talk for a moment about how you're planning to preserve the legacy that is Montrose Molders while reaching and appealing to that next generation of customers, of supply chain partners, and the like.
Yeah, preserving our current customer relationships is paramount. We have gotten to where we're at because of the great customer relationships that we have. So we've got to take those seriously. And we've got to, it's up to us as leadership to make sure that we foster a culture inside Montrose in which we take it very seriously that we need to continue to service our customers and provide them with an incredibly high level of service. And that when we screw up, because we will screw up from time to time, all companies do, that we take it seriously in order to remedy those issues. So we do foster a culture here of responsibility and making sure that we preserve those relationships while also looking out to grow the business. So I think that if we were to prioritize the two, the first is take care of our current customers. And then the second, subordinated to that, is, all right, let's go get some new customers. And of course, we're leveraging all the traditional means of, and the non-traditional means of going out and getting new customers. The traditional meaning, you know, this, the just the different leads lists, trade shows, things like that. But then also things like digital marketing and just building a brand online and social media and so on and so forth in order to get our name out there in front of people that we're not currently doing business with. I remember this quote, and I'm going to butcher it, but it's a lot easier to get more business from your current customers than it is to get business from people that have no idea who you are. It's really important for us to continue to maintain and tend to those current customer relationships, but it's also important to go out and grow the business and find new customers.
Always. Absolutely. Absolutely. So speaking of marketing, we're going to talk brand for a minute. How would you describe or define the Montrose brand today, and how do you see it evolving in the years ahead?
Oh, this is a great question. Like when I think of our brand, I think of our name associated with longevity, you know, experience, craftsmanship, and service. We're a place that you come to when you need a job done reliably, on time, at a cost that works for you. And how I want that to evolve over time is I'm not sure that I do want it to evolve over time. I mean, that is our brand and I want to stick to it. And if anything, I just want to make sure that our brand is more visible, is more well-known. And yeah. I think that's the idea. But yeah, when we do a lot of things that are critical components, this thing that you pull in order to inflate a life jacket on an airplane, that's a critical component. You cannot screw this up. This is a very important thing. And we like to think that our customer came to us. And by the way, we've been making this for decades and decades. Our customer came to this because they believe that we're going to be able to get this job done reliably, on time, and at a cost that works for them. And yeah, that's what I believe our brand is.
And you mentioned before that some customers like the fact that you command a bigger, I'd say, share of the supply chain. So it's not just the extruded or injection molded part, but it's also some level of assembly, maybe some level of decoration, and right, some level of customization or finalization. So it's made to suit a precise need or a precise ask. Do you see that continuing on, Brendan, in terms of your go-to-market approach of doing that more, I don't want to say fully vertically integrated, but taking on more levels of the supply chain on behalf of a customer?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we do is we listen to our customers. We listen to our customers and we listen to what they need us to do. And that's how we got into all of the other things in the first place. When my grandfather was making tools, he listened to his customers and found out that they also needed injection molding. And once we had that, you know, we listened to our customers and found out we also need assembly. So we added that and so on and so forth. And we haven't heard of anything beyond what we do now in enough. We haven't heard. Every once in a while, something comes up, but we'll add a capability if our customers ask us to. So we'll just continue to listen to our customers. And if it makes sense, if it makes good business sense to add, whether it's up or down that value chain, an additional capability in order to cement that brand as the company that you can go to for all things under one roof, then yeah, of course we'll add it. But it's been a little while since we've added a capability like that.
Okay. But it's interesting that it's very much customer-led or yeah, customer-driven capability. So if they're asking for it and you can do it, you'll listen.
Yeah.
And you'll bring it to bear if it's warranted. So that's great. So we had touched on this before with manufacturing, seeing a lot of technological shifts. You cited numerous ones in this conversation already. But one we touched on was AI and automation. Talk for a moment about specifically how you see AI and automation playing a bigger role in your operation at Montrose or with respect to the customer experience?
Sure. We are already leveraging it a bit. I don't see, there are no ways that I really see us leveraging it in terms of a customer facing interaction. We don't have any chat boxes that'll handle a quote for you online. We don't have any, that there are no automated responses yet. You're still going to get a human. Where we are using AI right now is primarily in data crunching right now. So we have an ERP that hoovers up tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of transactions all day, like everything that's happening in our organization. And then we dump these into enormous reports. And then the AI that's enabled through Excel and Power BI through Copilot really makes it a lot easier to distill insights, to derive insights from all of this data. Okay, this is where we need to improve. These are the yield rates that are causing you the most pain. It's basically insights at a click, whereas we would have to actually like manually go through reports before. I guess in the data crunching enabled by Copilot, we're using AI now. We are working with a team from Rutgers to install a number of different sensors on a bunch of our equipment out on the floor to monitor different things like the changes in the vibrations that a pump will make, so that we can monitor our equipment and do predictive maintenance rather than reactive maintenance. The AI will establish a baseline, right? And then once you start to deviate from that baseline, it's pretty much an indication that you're going to have an issue with that machine. And if that's a machine that you rely upon, then it's better to know about that ahead of time than it is after it breaks down and you're down for 2 or 3 weeks. So that's a cool way that it's coming onto the manufacturing floor. And then the third way is, well, let's say we have a complex injection molding issue. Okay. And it's a material that maybe we're not familiar with. It's a super exotic engineering grade material. And we've got these process guides and TDS documents that we've downloaded offline. We can feed those directly into Copilot and ChatGPT and explain the processing issues that we're having. And it will analyze all of that data. It'll analyze the process guide. It'll analyze the TDS. It'll take into account from what it knows from scouring the internet about injection molding issues. And it'll give us an ordered list of recommended solutions, recommended remedies for each of the problems that we're having. We're already using it in those ways. And where I see it being used in the organization going into the future is a little bit more interesting. There, it's already being used in detection, like visual detection. Like for a while now, you've had these robots that you can program. You know, you can program, okay, this is flash, this is a burn, this is whatever, a number of different injection molding defects. The parts pass below this camera and it'll weed out the ones that don't apply. But now they're starting to use AI in that, where it's actually learning on the fly what is not good and what is good based on information that you're giving it. And it's making adjustments and it's looking for the defects itself. I guess what I'm trying to say is that because these tools have become AI enabled, they're getting a lot more advanced in defect detection. That's what you want. You want to be able to weed out the defects before they make their way to the customer. And then the final way is there are actually injection molding machines out there that have like a closed loop circle, like a closed loop feedback, where there are sensors in the mold and the sensors are sending feedback to the machine. And then the machine is making changes to the process based on the sensor data that it's getting from inside the mold. So it's essentially processing it itself. This is like just scratching the surface of the effect that AI is having on the industry. And I could probably talk about this for another half hour, but it's pretty exciting stuff. We'll see what comes about, but we're trying to use it to the extent that we can right now. And yeah, we'll see where it goes. But the advancements are coming. They're coming at us quickly. So
yes, they're coming at every industry quickly. And it sounds like you're taking a very pragmatic approach to introduction as not a replacement, but as really initially a collaborator yeah. Data, an accelerator, yeah. and really that acceleration and collaboration is where AI seems to be showing up most right now for many industries. So that's, and some of the future forward-looking stuff sounds really exciting too.
That's the fear, right? Is AI going to take all of our jobs? But the way that we're looking at AI here is that it's not going to replace anybody. It's actually just like augmenting everybody's ability to do their job here just a little bit faster, a little bit more effective. And if anything, it'll improve our quality, our throughput. I don't think it's going to displace anybody.
Yeah. Understood. AI aside, what's really exciting you about either the plastics or the manufacturing industry right now? What are some things that you look a little bit to the not too distant future? Wow, I'm really excited about this, or what's going on right now?
Yeah, I'm excited about the advancements that have been made in recycling and sustainability. We have vastly increased our offerings to our customers in the way of sustainable materials. So we have the, not only on the recycling side, because the advancements in the recycling technology have been pretty significant over the last 5 or 10 years, but also the bioresins. Resins made not only your PHAs and your PLAs that are semi-biodegradable, the materials that they're making from things like seaweed. They're finding so many different ways to make plastic-like materials that look, that feel, that function like plastic. And I do think that it's got to be part of our mission to get those out, at least in front of our customers, to let them know that they're out there so that we can help them transition to a more sustainable type of plastic. And we've helped a large number of our customers transition mostly to recycled plastics at this point. Because 15 years ago, if you wanted a recycled plastic, it was black and it was pretty crappy. And you were going to compromise quality going to a reprocessor or recycled plastic. And that's not the case anymore. We're running green, yellow, red, clear plastic parts that we would have never been able to do a decade or so ago. We're proud to be able to bring those solutions to our customers and help transition to those solutions. And we're excited to continue that effort. But then, the other thing that excites us is just all the technology change. There's these 6-axis robots that do some really cool things, and we're just finalizing the installation of them now. And you'll be able to see us on LinkedIn. We'll be posting some videos of them doing some pretty interesting movements and whatnot.
Awesome. Now I'm going to ask you to kind of look further out in the future. So with your grandfather kicked off things, started the business. Your dad carried the torch the next leg of the race and is now stepping down. And now here you and Andrew are. So if we go way out into the future, were you to look back, how would you want your chapter, this third generation, to be remembered at Montrose?
This reminds me of an exercise I had to do where I had to write my own eulogy. It was really impactful. You got to project yourself in the future and then look back. And it really clarifies the type of person you want to be, the type of leader you want to be. And so I think this is a really great question, because it helps you reorient how you want to act over the next couple of decades, and helps you with, when you developing that roadmap. I look at the first generation. My grandfather started the business, and the second generation, they left, like I said, an enormously positive impact on the business, and will be passing it along in a better condition than they found it. And I think that it's really important for our generation to continue to do the good work that they kept up, to continue to espouse those values. Like I said, treating the team like family, treating the customer like royalty, and never stop improving. I think it's important to grow the business. I do think it's important we certainly have a lot of excess capacity now, and we can continue to grow without having to move into a different facility or anything like that. And I would like to grow the business too. To put it all in a nutshell, I would say that we'd like to grow the business, leave it better than how we found it, and not lose our way, not compromise our values while doing it. And that's how I'd like to be remembered.
Excellent. That sounds great. A number of years back, you were had a decision to make, which is, do I endeavor to continue on to join the family business, to play a role in it? And you elected to do that. It would seem, by all indications, you made the right call. What advice would you give to a young person, maybe in their 20s or so, who maybe is at that crossroad and they're thinking about, do I join the family business or not? If you were to impart a piece of advice, what might that be, Brendan?
So the one thing that I would say is build trust. Build trust with your employees. Build trust with your management team, your suppliers, your customers. And I was sitting down with someone recently, and they said something that absolutely floored me, because it really resonated with me. They said, organizations move at the speed of trust. And it's 100% true. Lack of trust is a tax on an organization, and trust is a dividend. If you are not constantly looking over your shoulder in all of your interactions, whether they be internal or external, then you're going to be able to move faster as an organization. So spend as much time learning about the challenges of those that you work with, whether, again, a supplier, a customer, a team member, and then really demonstrate to those people that you care about those challenges and you're willing to take action to address them and make their lives easier. And if you do that, I think that a lot of people will begin to trust you, begin to trust your ability to perform and perform in such a way that's beneficial to them. And once you have a culture of trust, then, I think that nothing can hold you back.
Awesome. That's a great, excellent point. Excellent point. Last question. If one of our listeners wanted to learn more about you or about Montrose Molders, what's the best way for them to connect?
This is the easiest question you've asked me. Go to our website, www.montrosemolders.com. Visit us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. That's probably the better way just because we've got all of our contact information on there. You get to see some pretty cool videos of what we're doing inside the shop. Or my email is brwilson@montrosemolders.com. Anybody can email me and I'm pretty well connected to it. I'll get back to you before too long. So that's the best way to reach us.
Awesome. Awesome. Brendan, thank you so much for sharing your story, your family's history, the transition ahead, and your vision for the future of Montrose Molders. We've been speaking with Brendan Wilson, third generation leader at Montrose Molders, as the company approaches its 60th year in business. And I'm Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Brendan, thanks again for coming on. Great to talk with you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Great to be here.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.